NBC Monitor News on the hour. Here is Lou Wood.
An investigator for the National Transportation Safety Board has suggested that the chartered jetliner that crashed at Anchorage, Alaska last night was trying to stop its takeoff. The Capital International Airways DC-8 was taking off for the Far East with servicemen and dependents when it came back to Earth, burned, then exploded. 183 of the 229 persons on board escaped. 45 servicemen and one stewardess were killed. Many of the survivors were hospitalized, and some of the soldiers who were not hurt reportedly fought their way back into the wreckage several times to rescue their colleagues before it was swept by flames. The Pentagon says Russia test-fired its improved SS-13 intercontinental ballistic missile into the mid-Pacific Wednesday. It was the first long-range test of the ICBM, a distance of about 4,700 miles from inside Russia to the landing point 300 miles northwest of Midway Island. A Pentagon spokesman refused to comment on whether the missile was carrying a multiple warhead. The SS-13 is similar to America's Minuteman missile. There was to have been a meeting of American and Japanese textile negotiators in Washington today, but it was called off when instructions from Tokyo failed to arrive. Authoritative sources said the delay is due to problems the Japanese government is having with that country's textile industry in offering major concessions to the United States on restraining the flow of non-cotton textiles to the U.S. And Japanese newspapers are saying the United States plans to withdraw all American combat forces from Japan by the end of June 1971. There are now about 39,000 U.S. military personnel stationed in Japan. The Director General of the Japanese Self-Defense Forces says he has no information on the published report, but admitted the possibility exists no American military personnel will be stationed in Japan by 1976. The communists are apparently planning a new major offensive near the Cambodian capital of Phnom Penh. A sizable buildup of North Vietnamese and Viet Cong forces is reported about 25 miles southeast of the capital, and four other columns of enemy troops are said to be moving toward them. In Saigon, military spokesmen say enemy attacks on U.S. bases in that country have dropped to their lowest point in at least 3 years. Diplomatic sources in Beirut, Lebanon say the left-wing government of the Sudan is facing opposition. Sudanese army officers, some high-ranking politicians, and students have come out in open opposition to the government of Premier Major General Jafar Numeri, one of four Arab nation leaders in the proposed new Arab Federation. It is described as the most serious internal crisis in the Sudan since Numeri seized power in a coup in 1969. In Beirut itself, a minor disturbance over an American movie threatens to have continuing repercussions. That story reported now by Mark Schleifer in Beirut.
40 students at the American University of Beirut have been arrested for rioting during a screening here of the Hollywood epic Che Guevara. Although the Egyptian actor Omar Sharif stars in the title role, Arab revolutionaries have denounced the film, saying it is an insult and betrayal of Che. The students threw rotten eggs and tomatoes at the screen and interrupted the performance for an hour before police removed them from the theater. Today, a student spokesman said that other students would organize demonstrations outside the Beirut movie theater as long as the management continues to screen the film. Mark Schleifer for NBC News Beirut.
Traffic on the Maid Road link to West Berlin was slowed up by East German border guards today, and it's believed connected with a Soviet protest over West German political activities in the divided city. Opposition members of the West German parliament had scheduled a meeting in Berlin for Monday. Russia called that a provocation in notes to the Western Allied ambassadors. At one point today, traffic on the Autobahn from Helmstedt to West Berlin was delayed for some time when the traffic light on the East German side was switched to red for an hour. East German border guards started meticulous checks on all Western vehicles and motorists, and traffic was backed up for more than a mile at the communist checkpoint at Marienborn. An ordination mass watched by about a million persons in a park in Manila was a highlight of Pope Paul's day today. Nearly 200 young Asians were ordained to the priesthood. In general, this was a day of warm gestures toward the Pope, who was the object of an assassination attempt when he first arrived in the Philippines. From the Philippines, the Pope will travel to Samoa and Sydney, Australia. The scheduled Revolutionary People's Constitutional Convention in Washington has become a kind of neighborhood visiting proposition instead. The trouble was an inability of the Black Panther sponsors to find a meeting hall. Groups of delegates distributed leaflets and talked with residents in ghetto neighborhoods of the capital. And the Black Panther Party says the new constitution, put together by its central committee and other leaders, will be explained at a meeting at a temporary headquarters. Two persons who say they are members of the organization called the East Coast Conspiracy to Save Lives have said Daniel and Philip Berrigan do not belong to their group. FBI Chief J. Edgar Hoover charged yesterday that the two Roman Catholic priests who are now serving prison sentences were principal members of the group that plotted to blow up power lines in Washington. The hour's top story, a National Transportation Safety Board investigator suggests the chartered jetliner that crashed at Anchorage, Alaska last night was trying to stop its takeoff. Lou Wood, NBC News.
Listen again on the hour for NBC Monitor News. Dear Santa Claus, this is the first time I've written to you this year. For Christmas, please don't bring me a baseball glove that's big enough to fit in. I saw a picture of it in the paper. It's a chair made like a big fielder's mitt, 5.5 feet wide, made of baseball glove leather, and you can have your name burned in it like a real player's glove. It costs $1,500. If it's okay with you, Santa, I'd rather have the money. Signed, Joe Garagiola. Hey, we're going to have a report on the Santa Claus situation in the Midwest 3 minutes from now. Here's Sergio Mendez in Brazil 66 with Chelsea Martin.
Santa Claus be Santa Kleiss? That doesn't sound right. Anyhow, in New York City, a mother pointed one of those street corner Santas out to her daughter and said, "Look, there's Santa." You know what the little girl said? She said, "Ah, there's too many of them." Well, that may be the case some places, but in others, there's a shortage. Bill Lindsay reports on the Santa situation in Chicago.
The Christmas season means work for a lot of unemployed actors. They're in demand to play Santa Claus. There's no standard price for hiring Santa. Actors Equity, which helps supply men to portray St. Nicholas, says each individual does his own bargaining. Kris Kringle Associates, a Chicago company which keeps about 35 men busy filling engagements, says inflation hasn't reached the North Pole yet. You can arrange for Santa's appearance in a parade for about $75. The company spokesman adds that unemployment has changed the business. Newspaper ads for potential Santas are drawing a higher caliber applicant than in the past few years. Most of the applicants are older men, but some are college students now. The House of Roman, a leading costume supplier, says the purchase or rental of a Santa outfit has gone up this year. That's because beards and wigs cost more. But the firm says business is better than ever. It began filling Santa suit orders back in July. You can dress in red for anywhere from $12.50 to $35 a day, depending on whether you prefer wool, corduroy, or velvet. Most department stores have regular Santas. The same men are rehired year after year, the day after Thanksgiving. One Chicago store is advertising for a new man this year, a Spanish-speaking Santa. Despite the unemployment increase, the Volunteers of America, who probably use more Santas than anyone else, say their source of Santa supply has dwindled. They're having trouble locating dependable men. They tried to recruit retired police and firemen, and even former mailmen, without much luck. Bill Lindsay, NBC News, Chicago.
And at 13 and a half past the hour, Santa, you're on the monitor beacon.
Come with Swiss Air to the great ski runs of the Alps. Come with Swiss Air to the great ski runs of the Alps for less than it would cost you to ski the local hills. For as little as $302, you can have 2 weeks of powder at resorts like Davos in the Swiss Alps and San Anton in the Austrian Alps. Airfare, accommodations, and excursions included. Price based on bulk inclusive tour fare, minimum 40 people. Swiss Air has many low-cost ski vacations. To find out more about them, call your travel agent or Swiss Air, the airline to all the Alps.
Happy Day Radio 66, WNBC, New York.
Here's Oliver on monitor with Gene. Here, the item.
Come out to the meadow. if you will, to the top of the hill. Come into my arms, Bonnie.
Go through the looking glass with Monitor's man on the aisle, Leonard Probst.
One of the hardest theater tickets to get right now is, of all things, to Alice in Wonderland. It's not a children's show, it's an adult version, and one of the most talked about shows in town right now. There are only 104 seats in the theater, which makes it so hard to get a ticket. You enter going down through a rabbit hole in the basement of a church. The couple in front of me said, well, you have to experience everything. And this is an experience unlike any other in theater. The theater, incidentally, is called The Extension, and it feels about the size of a telephone booth extension. The walls are filled with old umbrellas and crazy costumes, sort of a cross between Mary Poppins and Alice. And all of that is covered over by a huge white parachute cloth that's spread out like a tent top. And this is a weird Alice. The nursery rhyme has been turned from a dream into a nightmare. The familiar Lewis Carroll characters are menacing, savage rather than silly, and sexy, too. They're seen through a mixture of Freud and fear. The caterpillar sitting atop a mushroom is apparently smoking pot and getting stoned. The queen is vicious. The dormouse, March Hare, and Mad Hatter are like members in an insane asylum. The show, directed by Andre Gregory, sticks to the words of Lewis Carroll but takes them at face value. Carroll, you may recall, never wrote down to children. His puzzles, his questions, his games, his logic are mature, and the purpose of the play is to disturb a mature audience. Even Lewis Carroll is examined in a new light. At one point, Alice writes on a fence, Lewis likes little girls, and you wonder about that, too. The traditions are all there. Alice growing smaller, Alice growing bigger. Alice looking upward at the world, Alice in fear and ruled by creatures that give her orders and treat her as a child. It was written 100 years ago. What's new is that while the words are the same, the values are different. It's now filled with fear, psychiatric undertones, and every encounter saturated with menace. Alice in Wonderland, this is an Alice that makes you wonder and feel uncomfortable. Leonard Probst, NBC News, New York, reporting for Monitor.
Man, listen to that, Leonard. I gotta agree with you. Caterpillar getting stoned, riding on fences. Well, our dear friend Leonard in Wonderland, again next week, right here on Monitor. Here's a new one, After the Rain by Miss Dee Dee Phillips. It's the way she wants it, Miss Dee Dee. Go ahead, Miss Dee Dee. Maybe it's just the way. sure hate to ask you to go back out to the kitchen so soon after Thanksgiving, but the old galloping gourmet will be there to entertain you, so let's go.
I'd like to give you just a word of thanks to my grandmother. My grandmother who taught me the golden silver waltz, that's the quick waltz. Trina and me, actually. Da 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 dee da da dum da da dum. It's alright, it's public domain. And the result of this was that we did that brilliantly and also learned how to make whipped potatoes. And the whipped potatoes, the way she did it, and she's an old Scot, well, she couldn't be young, could she, really? And what she did the most marvelous thing. She'd take these baked potatoes and their jackets, smack them into the oven, cutting off a little bit at one end because you can explode a baked potato in its jacket. Crusting it with salt around the outside to stop it from burning. No foil. And then when they were beautifully cooked, she'd spoon them out and then she'd whip those. And they were lovely dry potato. There was nothing sort of moist and glucky about it. There were no little tiny nodules or pieces. Beautiful whipped potatoes from a baked potato in its jacket. Graham Kerr, Galloping Gourmet for NBC Monitor.
Tell me the truth. Did you really understand what he said? After he stopped singing? The old galloping gourmet? I tell you, Galloper, I don't like whipped potatoes. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to stay tuned because later today, the old Galloper is going to switch to French fries. But now, another chapter in the Granatelli saga.
Kids to football practice?
Sure, Billy. Dolly, want to take a ride?
Coming, Andy.
Dolly, why are you putting that can of STPL treatment in your purse?
Now is a perfect time to tell all the neighborhood parents about how STP oil treatment helps cars start easier and faster in cold weather.
Dolly, what's football got to do with STP?
Why, because inside the engine, it's just like a little football game. The vital engine parts are on our side. The other team is cold weather.
Yes, Dolly.
And to keep the cold from slowing down the parts, STP is in there like linemen, giving the engine parts the push they need to turn over easier so the car starts faster.
This is Granatelli. If the STP team always wins, I want to join.
Billy, when you live next door to Andy Granatelli, STP is the only game in town.
WGN Sugar Sugar, and in West Virginia, WGNT Huntington is your station, known as the Friendly Giant of the Tri-State. And this is the friendly host of the Monitor, Joe Garagiola. We'll be back soon.
Hi, this is Monitor's Fran Colton, the travel bug everyone's quoting. So pack up your grips and stay tuned for more tips, because you'll flip for the trips we're promoting.
Thanksgiving weekend. At least for some people, it's still the Thanksgiving weekend. 4 days. You know, that's a lot of holiday. It's also about 12,000 calories of holiday eating, I guess. Maybe it's a good thing I don't get 4 days off. Whew. Hey, you know, now that they've decided to move some of our holidays to Monday starting next year, I don't know why we don't consider moving Thanksgiving to a Friday. You consider it, and I'll play music. Ray Stevens with Come Around.
Come on around, come on around. We always come around. Open our hearts and rejoice. Love is here. Come on around, come on around. We always come around. See our minds, see ourselves as we are. Do you think of it just yourself?
Big these days. You know, there's one called Smog and Dirty Water. And then there's the city's game. That's with political problems like tax evasion and vote buying. There is a game called Blacks and Whites in which you exchange roles with a person of a different color. Games are serious business. Dr. Joyce Brothers reports on another one called The Marriage Game.
Playing a game can help your marriage if the game you play is the one designed by Dr. Robert Ravitch of the Beth Israel Medical Center in New York City. His game was designed to discover which marriage partner is really the boss. The couples themselves often don't know, and this lack of knowledge keeps them from dealing realistically with their problems and hampers treatment through therapy. Dr. Ravitch's game is simple. It consists of two little electric engines traveling identical track layouts on either side of a divided table. The wife operates one engine and the husband the other. Neither can see the train traveling on the other side of the table, but both can operate levers that will stop the unseen train at certain points. And if both trains at the same time try to travel the track that runs along the table divider, both are stopped, and one must back up and start over again. This isn't really a competitive game, for the race is against time, not against the person across the table. By cooperating, both players can win points, or it's possible for both to lose. Each couple repeats the game 24 times. A computer records each move in each game. After 350 marital pairs had played the game, Dr. Ravitch found that their marital interaction could be placed into as few as four categories. There was the competitive pattern, in which the players were out to beat each other. Then there was the cooperative pattern, in which the couple arranged signals and tried together to beat the game. In the dominant submissive pattern, one player always backed down. This was always the same person in each partnership, but it wasn't always the one that the couple itself believed to be the submissive partner. Mixed patterns of interaction were used by aimless, uninterested partners who tended to find neither marriage nor life very much worthwhile. The striking discovery made through the game was that every couple always used the same pattern of interaction, no matter how many times the game was played. By helping couples break out of this inflexible, rigid pattern of adjustment to each other, the little railroad sometimes strengthens their relationship and often saves their marriage. This is Dr. Joyce Brothers for Monitor.
Hey, listen, Dr. Brothers, you know what I think? I think the real test of a marriage would be to play that game with real trains. I mean, like up here, play with the Penn Central. If a couple can survive the delays and the problems of riding on that train, you know it's a good marriage. Hey, Peggy Lee's going to change the subject to romance. Peggy Lee sang, "I've never been so happy in my life." And Peggy, you know why? It's because you're on the Monitor Beacon.
Come this Swiss Air to the best skiing and opera skiing in the Alps. Take the sun, the tempo, and the nightlife of the Caribbean. Add snow, and you have Snow Beach, Swiss Air's brilliant winter resort on the sunny side of the Alps, where you can have a wonderful time, even if you don't ski. Come with Swiss Air to a Snow Beach resort, 2 weeks for as little as $383, including airfare. Price based on group inclusive tour fare, minimum 15 people. Call your travel agent or Swiss Air, the airline to all the Alps.
WNBC, New York.
Here's Tom Jones on Monitor, Can't Stop Loving You.
I watched the leaves falling to the ground. I'm walking up and down the streets of my hometown. You're here with me.
Successful businessman. He's president of Chanel Incorporated. But we're not going to talk about his vocation. We're going to talk about and find out about his avocation. He's a world-renowned gourmet and the only American to be elected to the leading gastronomic society of the world, Le Club des Cent in Paris. But H. Gregory Thomas is also an... And wait till you hear Joe Garagiola try to pronounce this word. Enologist. Enophile. What is that? I thought, you know, if I saw that on a sheet, I think it'd be like an eye doctor. Well, am I saying it right, Greg?
Yeah, and it comes from the Greek enos, which means the grape. And it's a lover of the grape wines. Wines made from grapes.
Well, my father used to make wine in the basement.
Make him an enophile necessarily.
Oh, I was trying to get a little class in the old neighborhood.
Well, maybe he didn't like the wine he made.
Oh, did he like it?
Oh, then he was an enophile.
Yeah, he loved it. Now, we've just finished with the Thanksgiving feast, and Christmas and New Year's are coming soon. What wines would you serve with a turkey dinner?
Well, generally, it is suggested that with fowl and with fish that you drink white wine and that you drink red wine with red meat. That's a rule of thumb, and it's easy, and it tastes better. But back until before 1900, nobody paid any attention to this at all. The great gourmets of history all through the 19th century drank indiscriminately red wine or white wine. But if you drink red wine with oysters, the red wine, because of the high tannin content, has a tendency to turn the oysters into a leathery substance which rests very heavy on the gut, and I don't think that's anything that people should think of doing. You can't win on that one. But, of course, if you happen to like red wine with fish, there's no reason. There's some good, very good fish with red wine, salmon, for instance, and salt codfish, which is one of the... I like salt codfish in any of its forms.
You have wine all the time. What's the most you've ever paid for a bottle of wine, say, in good times?
Well, I'm embarrassed to tell you.
No, why?
Well, because it sounds so ridiculously extravagant to the average listener. I paid $100 for a bottle of wine.
Wasn't black market.
No, not black market. It was at a restaurant in France, and I'm frank to admit that I didn't know it was going to be $100. The captain and owner of this remarkable restaurant in France came up to me and suggested that since I was a great gourmet, I couldn't leave the place without having it was a Lafite Rothschild 1865.
Did it taste like $100 wine?
Certainly not. It was very good, but no better, and probably not as good as a great 1928 or a great 1934 that would have been much cheaper.
Let's go to the other end. What if I've had kind of a bad day and don't have too much in my pocket? How low can I go to where I get a wine that I don't have to put in my cigarette lighter?
About $1.29, $1.49 a bottle.
Pretty good wine.
Very good wine, yeah. Very good wine. You can get a Beaujolais, or you can get a good... Spanish wine, a good Italian wine, a good Portuguese wine, and you pay between $1 and $2 a bottle, and they're excellent for the holidays.
Give me an instant course in how to be a gourmet with the wine, because usually the fellow comes over with the wine, he pours a little bit, he puts the cork.
Very hard to do it on the air. You better come to lunch with me, and I'll show you.
Listen, pay $100 for a glass of wine.
I'll
give you my number.
I'm not going to pay $100 for a glass of wine.
For your other friend, you would. For me, you won't.
I wouldn't even for that.
No, you know what I'm talking about? What am I supposed to do when he puts the cork there? And
the reason they put the cork there is because there is frequently a disease, not frequently, but sometimes there's a disease of the cork, which gives a musty taste to the wine. And so that they can turn it back to the dealer that sells it to them, you smell the cork and notice, of course, a good wine waiter will smell it first and then not serve you that bottle at all. But in some restaurants, they don't know or they think that they can get away with it and they will serve you the thing. But a gourmet can tell by feeling the cork. It must have a certain resiliency, like a good fresh cigar. When you feel it, has to be soft. If the cork is dry, if it smells bad and looks dark red, there are possibilities either that the wine wouldn't have lasted very long, still worthwhile tasting. Because I've smelt bad corks and the wine's been all right, the disease with the cork hadn't penetrated. So that's the reason they show you the cork. But the first thing you do when you get a glass of wine is to look at it in transparency, not the wine in transparency, against the white tablecloth, and see if it's clear. If the wine is cloudy, it's had a deposit in it, it's thrown color, as they say in the trade, it has tannin in the bottom of the bottle, and it will taste bitter. And this you should not accept. So you look at it in transparency, then you lift it up, and you put it to your nose and smell it. If the wine is going to be good, it has a great, great bouquet, as it's called. The bouquet is the smell. It's a combination frequently of a fruity smell, like raspberries or fresh violets. It's perfectly lovely. Part of the joy, maybe because I'm a perfumer, you know, in my business life, and I have to smell perfume oils, perfume essences, I appreciate a wine much more clearly through the sense of smell than even the sense of taste. But then you take some in your mouth, roll it around in the back of the palate, and with the eructation of the papillae, and that will throw everybody. If you talk about big words, it means the taste buds rising in the back of the tongue. The wine gets involved with the taste buds, and you have something which is perfectly delightful.
Man, I was listening so much I could almost taste it. I was just trying to do that. My guest has been H. Gregory Thomas, a gourmet and a wine expert, certainly an interest made possible by the fact that he's also president of Chanel Perfumes. This next one, guys, is on me. It's music by the Sandpipers, Free to Carry On.
So
75th anniversary of automobile racing. And the first American car race was held on this day in 1895. Six cars were in it. A 55-mile round-trip course from Jackson Park to Chicago to Evanston, Illinois. Two cars were electric, four were gas. Winner was J. Frank Duryea, driving a car invented by his brother. Average speed, 7 miles an hour. Recently, you may recall that Gary Gablovich broke that record in his car, the Blue Flame, at the Bonneville Salt Flats in Utah. He went 621 miles an hour. Man, from 7 to 621 in 75 years. That's progress, isn't it? Or is it? Someday We'll Be Together by Gordon Staples and the String Thing. Joe Garagiola and the Monitor Thing. Be back soon. Thank you.
go to Puerto Rico now?
Yes, I do. It's warm, there's a beach, and you don't need galoshes every day.
There must be a million people trying to get out of the city tonight. You gotta plan, make reservations for a trip like that.
Go on, call Pan Am, give it a try.
All right, but you're gonna hear such a busy signal. Pan Am, look, no chance of getting a flight to San Juan in the next 30 days, right? Tonight. In the morning or afternoon. I'll need two reservations. I got them. Immediate seating, any flight? Gee, thanks. Goodbye.
Busy signal?
Just pack my flippers, huh?
Pan Am introduces the San Juan Quickie Vacation, with immediate seating now to December 15th on the only 747 to San Juan. San Juan. Uncrowded hotels, off-season rates, empty beaches, and fine weather. Pan Am San Juan Quickie Vacation. Something new from the world's most experienced airline.
We're looking for sunshine.
Happy Day Radio 66, WNBC New York.